The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For 20 years now, Elizabeth Colbert has been writing about science and the environment for The New Yorker. And her book, The Sixth Extinction, won the Pulitzer Prize. Recently, Colbert wrote about the Interior Department under Ryan Zinke, the cabinet secretary in charge of federal lands throughout the United States. Zinke is one of the keys to Donald Trump's goal of deregulating the environment. Case in point, the recent decision to shrink Bears Ears National Monument in Utah, a decision which opened much of that land to uranium mining. Here's Elizabeth Colbert.
Now, Zinke is a former congressman from Montana. He was a Navy SEAL, which is important part of his background because he seems to want to run things in a sort of military-style fashion. He then became a state lawmaker from Montana, and then he was a one-term congressman from Montana.
He was a one-term congressman from Montana, but what kind of legislator was he? What was the emphasis of his brief work in Washington as a congressman?
Well, it's actually kind of an interesting tenure, you know, in the House of Representatives. He was considered sort of a moderate on public lands issues, opposing some of the more kind of, I'm going to call them radical steps that some congressmen like Bishop from Utah were recommending of just basically handing over these enormous tracts of federal lands to the states, which is what a lot of people on the far right, I guess, are advocating. He pushed back. He's from Montana, which is a big state for, you know, tourism and sportsmen, and got, I think, chastised for that and has now really fallen into line with this program of the Trump administration, which is basically just giving away as much public land as possible.
If you add up his recommendations, they're extremely alarming. He proposed increasing offshore drilling. He recommended opening up millions of protected acres for mining. He recommended slashing several national monuments. And by monuments, we mean enormous tracts of land in some of the most beautiful parts of the country. And he overturned a moratorium on new leases for coal mines. Which of these changes are being implemented right away, and which are still policy proposals under review and debate?
Well, none of them in effect, or very few of them, can go into effect immediately, because in most of these cases, I think that they're going to get stalled in court, but they, you know, started very early. One of the things I will just mention, that this has taken effect, I believe. You know, one of the first things Zinke did, the Obama administration had put in place this program to try to eliminate plastic water bottles from national parks because they produce a lot of trash. They're just, you know, not environmentally sound. And there was a report produced largely under the Obama administration that had been very successful. It saved a lot of trash, saved a lot of energy, that sort of thing. And one of the first things that the Trump administration did under, you know, pressure from the bottled water industry was to lift that ban.
So that seems almost perverse, almost gratuitous to reallow plastic bottles to be all over the place in national parks. I mean, really, even in the most cynical sense, how does the administration, does Donald Trump benefit from that?
You know, I think someone who's very cynical would say, you know, look at where, you know, Dannon or Poland Springs or whatever is giving their money. And I wouldn't be surprised if you find, you know, transfer, you know, campaign contributions. But is that really, you know, enough money to sway an administration, awash in, Koch brother money and Mercer family money? I don't know, but there's really no other reason except, as you say, either perversity, or you're in the pocket of the soft drink industry.
Let me read you something from Secretary Zinke's biography on the Department of Interior website. It says, Zinke is widely praised for his voting record supporting the Teddy Roosevelt philosophy of managing public lands, which calls for multiple use to include economic recreation and conservation. Unquote. Now, we think of Teddy Roosevelt as somebody who started establishing national parks throughout the country. We think of him, despite his killing of all kinds of wildlife in his time, as somebody deeply interested in nature and its preservation. Again, very much a man of his time. What does Secretary Zinke mean by the Teddy Roosevelt philosophy? What does that philosophy look like in practice?
Well, he's always invoked Teddy Roosevelt, and he continues to invoke Teddy Roosevelt. And as I mentioned early on in his career, you know, he had some, you know, perhaps always debatable claim to be trying to, you know, walk that line between preserving public lands for, you know, sportsmen and for wildlife and using them for commercial interests. And now, though, he seems to have gone, you know, totally into the all exploitation all the time mode. And many, many groups have, you know, started to make, you know, actively make fun of his claims to be a modern day, latter day Teddy Roosevelt. And he's very folksy and sort of outdoorsy claims to be, although I recently read another piece by someone who had been fishing with him and noticed that his, you know, tackle was upside down, and Zinke didn't seem to notice that. So how much of a real outdoorsman he is, I guess, is questionable.
Well, the cultural shift is also noticeable in other ways. You write that Secretary Zinke had the arcade game Big Buck Hunter installed in the cafeteria of the Department of Interior. Tell me about that.
I mean, it's a kind of ridiculous-looking game. He tweeted this photo of himself standing next to it, which it was, you know, sort of many people thought sort of comical. But, you know, this is part of this, you know, weird, some would say rather bizarre, lame symbolism. For example, he is well known in D.C. when the secretary is in the Interior Department's offices on C Street, they raise a flag to indicate that he is there.
Like the Queen at Buckingham Palace.
Yes, but apparently it is some sort of military tradition. I guess maybe if the commander's on the post, you raise a flag. I'm not a military person, so I don't know, but it has military roots. But it's been looked at as kind of ridiculous.
There's another big change going on, and that's got to do with the idea of climate change and the way it's addressed by the Department of the Interior and also the EPA. How does this compare with what we've seen in the past?
Well, yes, that's a huge and alarming, it couldn't be more alarming change. And it really gets to the Orwellian nature of this administration. They've just eliminated a lot of discussion, you know, on their websites and in federal reports. For example, they put out a strategic report for the Interior Department for 5 years that did not mention climate change. People are being actively discouraged from discussing climate change.
Is that merely for short-term business interests? Is that what's ruling the day here, this kind of cognitive sense that we don't believe what science and scientists are telling us? Is it all for money, campaign contributions?
Well, I think that you can't be too cynical here, unfortunately. And my belief is that this is, and this gets to the idea that once you put a rig in, once you lease that land offshore, you know, you can't take it back. is that they're trying to, and the oil and gas industry and coal industry is trying to, you know, sort of like, let's stake out as much as we possibly can during this administration, because we know this party is over. We know that fossil fuels, you know, are not the fuels of the future. But let's try to grab as much as we can right now. Let's try to put as much infrastructure in as we can right now. And that's a really scary thing, because once you put in a pipeline, you know, once you put in a coal-fired power plant, there's tremendous inertia in the system to amortize that investment. And that is exactly what we don't want to be doing. We do not want to be putting any more fossil fuel infrastructure in. We need to be shifting really dramatically in the other direction. And so this is this huge play, I think, last play, you know, of this long fossil fuel binge. And it's going to really set us back. And 10, 20, 30 years from now, not very long from now, you know, we're going to look back on this as a really, really crucial, you know, decade that we're losing and cannot afford to lose.
So what's happening here is, as they say in the Middle East, they're creating facts on the ground.
Exactly.
Finally, Betsy, you write in your really eviscerating piece on Ryan Zinke and the present Department of the Interior, in the decades to come, one can hope that many of the Trump administration's mistakes on tax policy, say, or trade, will be rectified. But the destruction of the country's last unspoiled places is a loss that can never be reversed. What checks are there on Zinke's authority? What hope is there of reversing any of these measures, either in the courts or through advocacy or through future political action?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of them, the majority of them, will be challenged in the courts and hopefully stayed in the courts. But that, you know, that gets us into a whole other conversation about, you know, what they're doing to the courts. But let us hope, you know, for the moment that some of these district courts will, you know, these cases will actually drag on. That is really the best that we can hope for at this point, because I do think that the plan is, and their hope is, to get as much in the ground as possible, as you said, facts on the ground. And that piece that I wrote quoted someone who had been in the Interior Department in the Obama administration, who said, you know, they know exactly what they're doing, and they know that once you muck up these places, there's no longer any reason to preserve them. So that is the really frightening part of it.
Elizabeth Culbert, thank you.
Thanks, David.
Elizabeth Culbert, staff writer at The New Yorker. You can find her reporting on the Department of the Interior and much else at newyorker.com.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.